There is an age-old question about the nature of human relationships that comes up based on our human history, and that is the way of peace sustainable? Is the way of love sustainable? And what happens with those beings who are not willing to walk on that path of peace and love, who want to fight, who want to punish, who want to seek revenge, who want to harm? What happens with them? So the question of effectiveness and sustainability comes up all the time, and it comes up with all the glaring examples of history that one can possibly remember in which wars have been fought, and it looks like, what was the other way? Was there another way? And then one's memory looks to whatever seems like it's impossible there wasn't another way. So out of that construct of history, the belief can arise that in certain circumstances, violence is justified, in certain circumstances. So there are various parts of that perception that need to be looked at more carefully. And right now, this is just a commentary. It's not an actual discussion of that, because that's very, very extensive. But a few things about this. One is Gandhi's belief, and I presume that of others who have followed the path of nonviolence, is the willingness to experience pain. That willingness to experience pain is what assures victory of truth. So you say to yourself, how much pain am I willing to experience, or how much am I willing to ask of other beings that they experience? And there isn't an answer to that. You have to decide what the answer is. But the path of nonviolence that Gandhi speaks of is a path in which one is willing to make the sacrifice of experiencing pain so that the wholeness of truth can evolve, can unfold. Because what the alternative is that looks like one wins a war is never true. One never wins a war. It just is a temporary cessation of fighting until the next round. So how do you evaluate what's more painful? That something, let's say, with force meets something with force and overcomes it through violent means, and then it seems like one side has won and the other side has lost, and it cuts short, let's say, the battle. Or there's that didn't happen, and it took longer because those who wanted to find the way of nonviolence created a synergy of perception, which was another alternative path, and were willing to go through a certain amount of suffering so that it wouldn't be now we're at war, now we're at peace, now we're at war, now we're at peace, but something more stable would occur. Does this require the coming together of people? Yes, it does. So that's part two of what I'm saying. The first part is that nonviolence doesn't mean non-suffering. The second part is, if we look at the global situation, then we don't know the answer to this question of the Holocaust or any other event, because nations didn't come together in the ways that we're talking about. They came together when the war was declared in various portions of the world. They came together to fight. But we don't have an example in history. We have a little bit of attempts now in the last century of nations coming together to make collateral agreements. We can even think about the more recent ones of nations signing the treaties related to climate change and energy reduction. That's collaboration. So is collaboration necessary in order to defeat a person or group or nation that's involved with warfare? Yes, it is. And this world hasn't been ready for it. And so we haven't known how to get there except through fighting. But if we continue to believe that might makes right and force is the only response to force, we will never find out what the way of collaboration, which is unity, through the belief in the capacity of each person to find the truth of their own humanity, where that will go. We have painted the world into evil and good, and evil and good, and we don't know yet what would happen if we met people with the intention of seeing their underpinnings, which is the good within them. We just don't know. So we're used to fighting in response to bullying. We're used to fighting in response to assertions of force. We're used to meeting force with force. And now, today, that perception is being justified and upheld more than ever. Well, perhaps not more than ever, but certainly it runs counter to any force that would like to see greater unity take place. That's just on one level, what I've just said. That's on the historical level. There's a whole other level that I can't go into now, which has to do with energy. If you put the energy of fighting, which is aggression and anger, into the world, you're actually fueling the thing that you're trying to stop. You're increasing the motivational pool from which the aggression and counter-aggression will continue.